Today we'd like to see the title of Purim Days in Esther chapters 9 and 10. To the souls on this online world through MP3 or YouTube channel on there, we'd like to suggest the three expositional questions. Number 1, in chapter 9, verse 16, the remainder of the Jews in the king's provinces gathered together and protected their lives, had a rest from their enemies, and killed 75,000 of their enemies, but they did not lay a hand on the plunder. What does it mean, the context, and what can we learn from here? Question 2, in chapter 9, verse 18, but the Jews who were at Shushan assembled together on the 13th day, as well as the 14th, and on the 15th of the month they rested and made it a day of feasting and gladness. What does it mean in the context, and what can we learn from here? Last question in chapter 10, verse 3. For the Mordecai, the Jew was second to King Ahasuerus, and was great among the Jews and well received by the multitude of his brethren, seeking the good of his people and speaking peace to all his countrymen. What does it mean in the context, and how can we learn from here? In the last time in Esther chapter 8, verses 15 to 17, so Mordecai went out from the presence of the king in royal apparel of blue and white, with a great crown of gold and garments of fine linen and purple. And the city of Shushan rejoiced and was glad. The Jews had light and gladness, joy and honor. And in every province and city, wherever the king's command and decree came, the Jews had joy and gladness, a feast and a holiday. Then many of the people of the land became Jews, because the fear of the Jews fell upon them. Mordecai had served faithfully for years, endured Haman's hatred and opposition, and ultimately risked his life for his people. Yet his exaltation was not merely the result of human effort. It displayed God's providential care. God had been working behind the scenes throughout the entire story, positioning Esther and Mordecai for the moment when their faithfulness would be used for the preservation of his people. Chapter 9, verse 1. Now in the 12th month, that is the month of Adar, on the 13th day, the time came for the king's command and his decree to be executed. On the day that the enemies of Jews had hoped to overpower them, the opposite occurred, in that the Jews themselves overpowered those who hated them. Once again, the Lord completely turned the tables. On the very day when the enemies of Jews expected to gain power over them, the Jews gained the power over those who hated them. God reversed the situation and brought deliverance to his people. Verses 2 and 3. The Jews gathered together in their cities throughout all the provinces of King Ahasuerus to lay hands on those who sought their harm, and no one could withstand them, because the fear of them fell upon all people, and all the officials of provinces, the satraps, and the governors, and all those doing the king's work, helped the Jews, because the fear of Mordecai fell upon them. The Jews gathered throughout the provinces of Persia and Empire to defend themselves against those who sought to destroy them. The people were afraid of the Jews, and no one could withstand them. The officials of the provinces also supported the Jews, because Mordecai had been elevated to a position of great authority. Verse 4, for the Mordecai was great in king's palace, and his fame spread throughout all the provinces. For this man, Mordecai, became increasingly prominent. Mordecai continued to increase in influence and honor, and his reputation spread throughout the provinces. Verses 5 and 10. Thus the Jews defeated all their enemies with stroke of the sword, with slaughter, destruction, and did what they pleased with those who hated them. And in Shushan, the citadel, the Jews killed and destroyed 500 men. Also, Parashantata, Dalphon, Asapata, Porata, Adalaya, Aritata, Parmashita, Arisai, Aridai, and Fajedata, the 10 sons of Haman, the sons of Hamadata, the enemy of the Jews, they killed, but they did not lay a hand on the plunder. The Jews struck down their enemies who sought to harm them, including the 10 sons of Haman, yet they did not take the spoil of their enemies. This detail is significant. The Jews were not seeking personal enrichment, but were acting to preserve their lives against those who intended to destroy them. Their actions were defensive rather than motivated by greed. On that day, the number of those who were killed in Shushan, the citadel, was brought to the king. The number of those killed in the citadel of Shushan was reported to the king. Even though Jews had been given permission to take possession of their enemies, they deliberately refrained from doing so. Verse 12. And the king said to Queen Esther, "The Jews have killed and destroyed 500 men in Shushan the citadel. The 10 sons of Haman, what have they done in the rest of the king's province? Now what is your petition? It shall be granted to you. Or what is your further request? It shall be done." The king asked Esther how many enemies had been killed throughout the empire, since the 500 had been killed in Shushan alone. He then again asked Esther what further request she might have. 13:14. Then Esther said, "If it please the king, let it be granted the Jews who are in Shushan to do again tomorrow according to today's decree, and let Haman's 10 sons be hanged on the gallows." So the king commanded this to be done. The decree was issued in Shushan, and they hanged Haman's 10 sons. Esther requested that the Jews in Shushan be permitted to continue defending themselves on the following day, so 14th, and that the bodies of Haman's 10 sons be displayed publicly. Displaying the body of executed enemies on poles were consistent with an ancient practice intended to demonstrate the consequences of a rebellion and to warn others. Esther's request therefore emphasized the complete defeat of Haman's influence and the removal of any remaining threat. Verses 15-16. And the Jews who were in Shushan gathered together again on the 14th day of the month Adar, killed 300 men at Shushan, but they did not lay a hand on the plunder. 16. The question 1. The remainder of the Jews in the king's provinces gathered together, protected their lives, and had rest from their enemies, and killed 75,000 of their enemies, but they did not lay a hand on the plunder. The Jews in Shushan killed another 300 of their enemies on the 14th day over Adar. But again, they did not take their possessions. Throughout the other province, the Jews defended themselves and killed 75,000 of those who sought to destroy them without taking any spoil. The 15th day was the day of defense against their enemy. Afterward, 15th Adar, came rest and celebration. The Jews had been preserved from destruction, and their mourning was turned into rejoicing, Esther 8, chapter 8, verse 16, 17, cross-reference. 17 and 18. This was on the 13th day of the month of Adar, and the 14th day of the month they rested, made it a day of feasting and gladness, the other province except Shushan. But the Jews were at Shushan assembled together on the 13th day, as well as on the 14th, 2 days. On the 15th of the month, they rested. Shushan is 15th. The one more, and 14th day is also slaughtered too. Where did the day of feasting gladness? Question to verse 18. The Jews in the village celebrate on the 14th day of Adar, while the Jews Shushan celebrate on the 15th day. After the conflict was over, they rested, feasted, and rejoiced. The Jews fought their enemies on the 13th day of Adar. The Jews in the province rest to celebrate on 14th of Adar, while the Jews Shushan rested and celebrated on 15th. Thus, Purim, the plural form of a Pur, that is the law, was observed on either the 14th or 15th of Adar, depending on the location. Verse 19, therefore the Jews of villages who dwelt in the unwalled towns celebrate the 14th day of the month of Adar with gladness and feasting as a holiday for sending presents to another. The Jews living in villages therefore observe the 14th day of Adar, but only Shushan 15th day, as a day celebration, feasting, gladness, giving gift to one another. Verse 20 up 22. And Mordecai wrote these things and sent the letters to all the Jews near and far, who were in all province of King Ahasuerus, to establish among them that they should celebrate yearly the 14th, 15th days of the month of Adar, as the days on which Jews had rest from their enemies, as the month which was turned from sorrow to joy for them, and from mourning to a holiday, that they should make them days of feast and joy, of sending presents to one another, gifts to the poor. Mordecai recorded this event, established an annual observance to remember the days of deliverance. Purim was to be celebrated at a time feasting, gladness, gift-giving, and care for the poor. The purpose was to remember God's special act of deliverance. What had begun as a decree, destruction, became a lasting memorial of God's preservation of His people. Their sorrow was turned into joy, and their mourning into celebration. Psalm 30, verse 11, that is here. You have turned for me my mourning into dancing. You have put off my sackcloth, clothed me with gladness. 23:20 said, so the Jews accepted the custom which they had begun, as Mordecai had written to them, because Haman, the son of Hammedata, the Agagite, the enemy of all the Jews, had plotted against the Jews to annihilate, had cast a prayer, that is the law, to consume them and destroy them. But when Esther came before the king, he commanded by letter that this wicked plot which Haman had devised against the Jews should return on his own head, and that he and his sons should be hanged on the gallows. So they called this day Purim, after the name Pur. Therefore, because of all the words of this letter, what they had seen concerning this matter, and what had happened to them, the Jews continued to observe Purim according to what they had already begun and according to Mordecai's instructions. The name Purim came from Pur, the Persian word for law, because Haman had cast lots to determine the day on which the Jews would be destroyed. Esther chapter 8, verse 7. What Haman intended for evil, however, was turned back upon him. Through Esther's intervention, the king issued a decree that resulted in Haman and his son being executed. Thus, the evil that Haman intended against the Jews ultimately came upon himself. Verse 27-28, the Jews established and imposed it upon themselves and their descendants, and all who would join them, that without fail they should celebrate these 2 days every year, according to the written instructions, according to prescribed time. that these days should be remembered and kept throughout every generation, every family, every province, every city, 14-15. And these days of Purim should not fail to be observed among the Jews, that the memory of them should not perish among their descendants. The Jews established Purim as an annual observance for themselves. Their descendants, those who joined them, they were to remember and celebrate these days from generation to generation, especially at God's delivery from enemies. 29:31. The queen asked the daughter of Abihail with Mordecai, the Jew, wrote with full authority to confirm the second letter about Purim. And Mordecai sent letters to all Jews to the 127 provinces of the kingdom of Israel with words of peace and truth to confirm this day of Purim at the appointed time as Mordecai, the Jew, Queen Esther, had prescribed for them, and as they had decreed for themselves and their descendants concerning matters of their fasting and lamenting. Esther and Mordecai formally confirmed the observation of Purim, sent a second letter throughout the Persian Empire. The letter contained the words of peace and truth and instructed the Jews to observe these appointed days. The celebration was connected with the Jews' fasting, mourning, and crying out for deliverance during the crisis. 32. So the decree has to confirm that this matter is the Purim, and it was written in the book. As the command established the observance of Purim, and the events were recorded in the book, Purim became both a Jewish holiday and a memorial of God's providential preservation of His people. God had turned the evil intended against His people into good, and had transformed their sorrows into joy. Course reference, Genesis chapter 20. Last chapter 10, verse 1. And King Ahasuerus imposed tribute on the land and on the island of the sea. King Ahasuerus imposed a general tax throughout his empire, including the mainland and the islands of the sea. Verse 2. Now all the acts of the power, his might, and the account of greatness of Mordecai, to which the king advanced him, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the king of Media and Persia? The king's great accomplishment and Mordecai's elevation to a position of honor were recorded in the official chronicles of the kings of Media and Persia. That's a Persian country. Empire. Mordecai had become second in the rank of King Ahasuerus and was highly regarded among the Jews. Mordecai's greatness was demonstrated not merely by his position, but by how he used his authority. He sought the welfare of his people rather than his own personal advantage. Instead of using power of self-enrichment, he used his position to promote the good of others. The principle is reflected in the example of the Roman centurion in Luke chapter 7. The centurion understood authority because he himself was under authority. He could command others because he first understood what it meant to submit to authority. Luke chapter 7, 8-9, cross-reference. A person who refuses to live under proper authority can easily abuse authority when it is entrusted to him. True leadership requires accountability, submission, and a concern for the welfare of those under one's care. Mordecai was a good ruler because he sought the welfare of his people and worked for their peace and security. Last verse 3, the question 3. For Mordecai the Jew was second to King Ahasuerus and was great among the Jews and well received by the multitude of brethren, seeking the good of his people and speaking peace to all his countrymen. Mordecai was highly regarded among the Jews. He was accepted by the multitude of his brothers. because he sought the good of his people and spoke peace to all his descendants. The book of Esther is one of the great accounts of God's providential care in the Old Testament. Although God's name is not explicitly mentioned in the book, his hand is evident throughout the story. He positioned Esther and Mordecai at a critical moment, overturned Haman's evil plan, preserved his people, and turned the sorrow into joy. The story teaches us that even when circumstances appear hopeless, we need not despair. God remains sovereign over individuals, nations, and circumstances. When his people trust him, step forward in faith and obedience, he is able to accomplish his purposes through them. Romans chapter 8, verse 20, cross reference. Those whom God places in positions of authority or influence should not turn away from people in need. Esther and Mordecai used their positions not for personal advantage, but for preservation of welfare of others. The book Esther therefore reminds us that God is at work, even when his hand is not immediately visible. God is able to use ordinary people in significant positions to accomplish his purposes, and he can turn circumstances that appear to lead to destruction into occasions of deliverance and blessing. We covered all three questions. So let us sing all together on Purusha Maranatha song. Continue to keep on prayer or missionary, to also pray chaplain in South Sudan and others in Africa. Also pray for Iranians, especially underground Christians as well. Here is the testimony, Ali, a blessing amid the world. So you may read that. Continue to keep on praying for missionary. So may God bless you richly.